First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
It's a public health emergency in Greater Jacksonville as the Delta variant of coronavirus rampages through this region. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, our Friday media roundtable focuses on the impact of the pandemic this week in our area. 549-2937. Give us a call. Then later, tomorrow's Olympic hopefuls are competing in Jacksonville this weekend. We'll drop in on that. But first, it's Friday, and here to discuss a busy week in the news, we welcome Dan Scanlon of the Florida Times-Union. Hi, Dan.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. Writer-journalist Shelton Hull back with us. Shelton, good morning to you.
Good morning.
WJCT News reporter Sydney Bowles here in studio with me. Hey, Sydney.
Hi, Melissa.
And rounding out our fabulous foursome, A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics. Hi, A.G.
Hey, good morning.
So good to have all of you with us. Lots to talk about this week. We'll go to your calls, folks, in a moment. You can also watch our video live stream of this show right now on our Facebook page, on WJCT's YouTube page, and on WJCT.org. And it'll be available to PBS Jax Passport subscribers on demand shortly after this show airs. And as ever, we're live on the radio, and you can give us a call, 549-2937. Email us, too, at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, or tweet me at Melissa Injax. And our Facebook page is always a lively comment place for discussion, too. We're going to begin with our top story. Greater Jacksonville is now ground zero in these United States for the spread of the Delta variant. Hospitals and ICUs are overwhelmed as we speak with mainly unvaccinated patients. Now, a little in the hour, later in the hour, we're going to talk about workplaces and issues with COVID where you work, how the state is responding or not responding, some say, to this crisis. But first, let's discuss the critical situation in our local ERs. Give us a call, everyone. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to at Melissa Injax. Baptist Health is full. UF Health has been sounding the alarm for some time as COVID patients who are virtually all unvaccinated are coming in to be intubated and put on ventilators. What that means is that other surgeries, other emergency needs are being pushed to the back burner. And so what we're trying to get at here is that if you have another medical problem, you may not get the best quality of care right now because the hospitals are so completely overwhelmed. Dan Scanlon, let's begin with you. You know, the people in our local healthcare systems have been screaming this to anyone who will listen for weeks now, that this is an emergency. It's as bad as it gets, and it's so worrisome.
Well, we saw that chilling image earlier this week of 21 new COVID beds being added to a local hospital in what appeared to be their basement, and that was scary enough. Baptist has apologized for something that was on social media yesterday that said that they were at maximum capacity. They now say that
thank you for that clarification.
Are extremely busy.
Yeah, they clarified that. You're right. Thank you for that. Go ahead.
But it is scary. It's scary to see. I mean, mask mandates are back in hospitals now. My own gymnasium is in a hospital, and I haven't been there in 17 months. Now, renewed concerns, even with my vaccine shots, that I don't want to be in a hospital building exercising when there are people who are sick and I could become a breakthrough case.
Yeah, absolutely right. We've been saying this and saying this and saying this. Please get vaccinated and please mask up wherever you go right now because it's really spreading everywhere and this is a highly infectious, deadly variant. There are free testing sites all over town. They all tend to have long lines, Sydney Bowles, because people are trying to figure out if they may be positive. We've been seeing that this week too.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like everyone's kind of taken this
really seriously, as they should, You know, I think the context for what we're seeing right now is this, I think, kind of a bombshell report from the Washington Post yesterday night that basically said that the war has changed and all of us living here in one of the reddest of the red zones, we can witness that in the vaccine, in the testing lines, in how crazy our hospitals are. The the CDC is talking amongst themselves about how this Delta variant is almost a different disease and that the vaccines are really effective at preventing severe disease. That's why we're seeing so many of the people in our hospital are unvaccinated, but they're not preventing transmission as they were before. So it's scary, and it's different now than it was.
It is. A.G. Gancarski, you know, Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry is like mayors of all the other large Florida cities right now, urging people to be vaccinated. He's been working with his emergency ops team and with local hospitals on this. The front lines in this crisis are the local leadership across Florida. They are hampered, some say, by the fact that Governor DeSantis has forbid them from bringing back emergency mask mandates and such to try to tamp down on the rate of infection and serious illness. And so the tension around that and the frustration among some Florida residents about that is growing.
Yeah, and the governor obviously has his political reasons for doing what he did, but about a month ago, he essentially declared the emergency over. They went to weekly reporting of COVID-19 data and so on, and, you know, the long and the short of it was at a time when the state had been ramping up for this Delta variant, which pretty much targets the population demographics we have in Duval very well, younger people, unvaccinated people, et cetera, you know, the city got caught flat-footed. I mean, Leon Haley, before he died, you know, was sounding the alarm. Chad Nielsen over at UF Health also, he's basically said that the state has said you're on your own. And the state pushes back against these things. The state basically says, well, did you talk to the CEOs, et cetera? But you know and I know that we hear from nurses, we hear from people who are actually in the ERs, and they are describing situations that are not, you know, consistent with advanced nations' health care. Basically, you know, we are being brutalized. DeSantis talked to Lenny Curry yesterday. I don't know what came of it, but, you know, the governor also talked to the Senate and House leader. There's a rumor that he's going to set up a special session of the legislature to block mask mandates, such as in public schools. So that could have been what he talked to Curry about. I don't know. Perhaps we'll get clarification on that. But Jacksonville is on the radar because of the issue, but the governor's response has been muted at best. And, you know, and until and unless Ron DeSantis invests real political capital in saying, hey, we need to get this vaccination done instead of, well, it's a matter of choice or whatever his, you know, talking point of the day is on Fox News, you're not going to see that progress. And every percentage that is protected, you know, makes the vaccine more effective, you know, holistically. But the flip side is this. The vaccines that we have now aren't necessarily ready in the same way for Delta. And we're seeing that because of the breakthrough cases.
That's right. Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, it's a real conundrum.
That is so, I'm so glad you brought that up because we are hearing a lot about breakthrough cases. Now, that said, people with breakthrough cases are getting sick. And by breakthrough, we mean fully vaccinated people are still getting COVID with this new variant. However, they are far less likely to be sick enough to need to go to the hospital. So the vaccine is offering some protection there, but it does. The vaccine is not a panacea, in other words. Now, AG mentioned the governor saying he will call legislators into special session to fight any federal directive around a mask mandate in Florida schools. The Broward County schools and a couple of other school districts around the state have announced this week they will be mandating masks for kids when they start class in August. We'll have to see what Duval County does. At the same time, we just need to stress that young and healthy people with no pre-existing conditions are getting sick and coming into ICUs. We're also hearing from healthcare workers and physicians, and I'm reading from a tweet from someone who was on a conference call last night with public health experts here in our area, that the situation is dire, that there's been an uptick in pediatric hospital admissions and kids in the ICU. We are going to start seeing children die of COVID in the very near future. So Shelton Hull, kids 12 and under still are not eligible to be vaccinated, and they are getting ready to go back to school in our area with school campuses that will have a mask optional policy. I think it's fair to say that parents are terrified right now, parents of young children, about this situation.
Oh, absolutely. And they should be afraid. I mean, you know, let's be honest here. We've had over half a million Americans killed in the first year of the pandemic. The way things are looking now, we could easily top, 612 deaths so far this year. I mean, so far since the pandemic began. And we could easily top a million by Christmas time, if not by the end of the year. You know, we've had this thing going on for over a year now. And from the very start, all we've seen on the local, state, and national levels is our politicians arguing, our politicians not being able to get along. You know, if the Messiah came to Earth right now, some of them would not attend the press conference just out of spite for each other. You know, that's the real pandemic. The pandemic is, if we can't handle this, what are we able to handle? We've had over 600,000 killed in America, millions killed around the world, trillions of dollars in losses to the global economy. People are traumatized. People are sick. We got poor guys like Ben Frazier fighting the disease right now. People who've lost their spouses, lost their parents, and lost their grandkids.
He's vaccinated.
And we should all be vaccinated. We should all be masked up. But now we've created a problem where, you know, local, state, federal government, you've had over a year. You've had almost a year to get together, to get it together on this situation. And the primary reason that this disease has spread like it has around the country and around the world is because the so-called leaderships of their government, some I like, some I don't like, but none of them can get it together. None of them can put their little posturing and their little games aside long enough to save people's lives. And what we're seeing in this country and around the world is a complete breakdown of respect for law and order, respect for political stability, and respect for a lot of the key institutions, you know, that are happening right now. Look what's happening with teachers, nurses, first responders, our military. It's hitting all of them now, too.
Yeah.
And now no one trusts anyone.
And a lack of respect for science and public health, I think, too, to add to that. Let's go to some calls. 549-2937, Mark in St. Augustine. Hi, Mark. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. You mentioned earlier that the majority of people who are in the hospital are individuals who are unvaccinated. And I agree with your guest that's talking about, you know, at a national level, you can turn on CNN and get one view. You turn on Fox, you get another view. That's fine. But I think at a local level, even a news broadcast like yours or our local affiliate, I think it would be good to look at, all right, who are the people who have chosen not to get vaccination and why did they choose not to? And have a longer presentation on alleviating those concerns. Are they concerned that they feel this vaccination was rushed through the process and it's unsafe and I'm not letting the government shoot me up? It'd be nice. I got vaccinated. I'm not worried about it. But if those individuals are of that mindset, then maybe somebody can come on and talk about how this science had, for this type of vaccine had been worked on for years. It wasn't like they just dreamed it up overnight one time.
Mark, so I hear you. We have been doing that. I know you've called before. We will continue to talk about how this vaccine was developed. And you're right. It was not developed in a mad rush. The science behind it had been developed for many years. It is safe. It is effective in preventing serious illness and death. And I want to thank you for that call. Dan Scanlon, people who are refusing to get vaccinated have a number of reasons. There are those, like what Mark said, they don't trust the vaccine because they think it was rushed. There are people who've just been anti-vaccine for feeling that there are elements in the vaccines that aren't good for you. People who prefer natural health, they see the vaccine as somehow not consistent with their holistic health lifestyle or what have you. There are people of color who don't trust pharmaceutical companies and doctors because there's a horrible history of racism in America and experimenting on people of color and hurting them. There are also people who won't get vaccinated because of their politics, because they have seen disinformation on right-wing websites and Facebook pages and also on Fox News telling them not to trust the vaccine. And Dan, you know, we interviewed a COVID nurse on this show last week, and she said she literally has people coming into the hospital, unable to breathe, and even right up to the moment that they're being intubated, they are yelling at her and telling her that they don't believe this is real. They think it's all a hoax. They don't think the vaccine would have saved them. They don't believe they actually have COVID. They think it's all a political piece of nonsense. So, you know, when you hear stories like that, people willfully refusing to get vaccinated and then getting sick and possibly dying because they've fallen into this ideological rabbit hole, you just almost want to throw up your hands in despair.
I saw your tweet last week about that ER nurse, and I just couldn't believe it. It was almost an emotional kick in the gut on that. There are people who legitimately should not or could not, cannot take this because they have immune issues, and this might compromise them. There are those who have some health issues already who cannot take them. But then there's right. the concerns that it'll make you magnetic, as we heard on NPR, and yeah. the comment from the lady that we heard an hour ago on NPR saying, I don't see people dying in the streets on this. I just... Again, threw my hands up as I was shaving over that one. I don't know what to say. The only thing that concerns me right now is that this Delta variant could spawn another variant. Again, we're hearing this on NPR and elsewhere. And that variant may not be even affected by the vaccine. And so we've got to stop it now.
Jane in St. John's County. Hi, Jane. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to let you know yesterday I volunteer at Mayo, and we're all very careful there as volunteers and with patients. And the gentleman asked me if he had to wear a mask because of the China virus. And I looked at him kind of blankly above my mask, and I said, sir, I don't know what you're talking about. There is no such thing as the China virus. And he kind of stopped a minute, and I said, do you mean COVID-19? And he looked at me and he said, well, yeah, I guess. And I said, well, we are all being very careful with COVID-19, but, you know, people just try to turn it into such a problem, and I pretend ignorance to be able to communicate that and try and turn it around.
Jane, thanks for that. Thanks. And thanks for volunteering, too. I know that's got to be scary right now going into the hospital every day, but thank you. Yeah, lots of calls. Kate in Riverside. Hello, Kate.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I wrote a letter to Dr. Green on Wednesday after I saw the news come out of the CDC on Tuesday. She hasn't answered me yet, but basically I said if the school board does not do the right thing and put a mask mandate in place this coming Tuesday at the school board meeting, I will not be in my classroom on Wednesday. I am resigning. I'm coming off a year leave of absence, and this is just absolutely ridiculous that we cannot do the most simple, inexpensive thing we can do to protect ourselves.
You're a teacher?
I'm a teacher at Westside High School.
So you'll be resigning?
I will be resigning.
And what are some of your colleagues saying to you about this?
Well, I took a year leave of absence. Our department was supposed to have 7 teachers last year. The entire year we got by with only 5. And the job coaches stepped in and helped out. It was a nightmare, and it's going to be worse this year.
Kate, I'm so sorry that you feel you can't go into the classroom, but I understand why you feel that way. And it's
I don't understand why our union is not stepping up, why I'm mind boggled.
What is the Duval Teachers Union saying?
I don't know. I haven't seen anything from them about it. I mean, I know these things move glacially in making these decisions, and I guess they just haven't had time since Tuesday when the big change came about to get something in place to handle it.
Thanks, Kate. Be safe. Sydney Bowles, you know, the Duval County School Board is hearing from parents. They're hearing from teachers. And there are teachers that are, like Kate, that are just not going to go back to class. I think you reported the other day about 1,000 families have decided to do virtual school in Duval County because of this state of affairs.
Yep, we saw about 1,400 students in Duval County have, as of, I want to say Tuesday maybe, have opted into virtual learning this year. It is a different program than what was offered last year. It is synchronous for some students, meaning they learn along with other students. It's asynchronous for others. The 1,400 that we are seeing is a very, very small percentage of the total population.
Yeah.
It's like 1% of students. But when you take that alongside with the teacher that we just heard from and the protest from families that we saw a couple of weeks ago now, you can tell there is just this real fear, and it's a grounded fear, I think, about what these kids are walking into and what they might bring home.
Here's a tweet from Agata. I'm seeing hundreds of parents on various groups on social media sharing information on how to homeschool. They're losing faith in our school board to protect our children. About 2,000 of them have signed a petition this week in favor of a mask mandate in schools. A.G. Gankarski, superintendents like Dr. Diana Green are caught between parents who are screaming for a mandate, other parents who are saying don't do a mandate, and Richard Corcoran, the commissioner of education, and the governor, who are saying that they will go so far as to call a special legislative session to make sure that there is no mask mandate in schools. Superintendents are caught between these conflicting currents. And it will, we're just going to have to wait and see, in particular in Duval County, whether the superintendent comes down in favor of pro-mask parents or decides that she doesn't want to get crosswise with Tallahassee.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, and as I understand it, it would ultimately be a board decision rather than a superintendent edict. But, you know, in either case, I mean, you can't really get crosswise with this governor, because the governor has said on multiple occasions that school boards are being targeted. Any school board member that votes for a mask mandate, that votes for a vaccine mandate, he's going to put his political apparatus in gear against them. You know, typically the people who are on school board are starter politicians or sort of career transition politicians. They might not be able to get elected to something else, but they're getting elected to school board in the hopes of going on to something else. We've seen that time and again. So you have a certain degree of ambition there. I'm curious to see what they actually do, because this is one of those tough calls that is guaranteed to tick off, you know, two different bases. Which base is more important? The Republican Governor Ron DeSantis base, or, you know, these parents who, you know, going into the second year of the pandemic now, they want their kids protected in schools, and they know in their heart of hearts that without mask, it's not going to be the same degree of protection. And, you know, we've also seen pediatricians. The Florida pediatricians came out and said, we want masks in schools because, you know, kids under 12 can't get vaccinated. That's half your population. So, you know, it's an existential crisis for the school district right now.
That's right. Janelle in Ortega Forest. Hi, Janelle. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hi. I am a teacher in a local music school, and I'm concerned because I teach a lot of young children who are too young to be vaccinated, and I'm concerned about the secondary effects of not having a mask mandate in the schools. People like us, who are basically independent contractors, other kinds of schools like your ballet and martial arts and other kinds of things that service children are going to be adversely affected. They get one case and pretty much have to shut down. If they, you know, have to shut down for a couple of weeks because of this possibility. So a pro-business governor supposedly is really working against the interest of a number of businesses who rely on children to for their businesses. Last year during the shutdown and for most of the year, I lost nine tenths of my students. And that affected my income immensely. So thank
I'm
you
so
very
sorry,
much.
Janelle. And Janelle, will you be requiring your students to mask up? What are you doing?
Generally, our students are masking up. Some of our adult students are not. Some of the staff, since we've been vaccinated, have chosen not to wear masks as much. But I think most of us are going back to mask because of the children. I have vulnerable people in my family as well, and so even though they're masked, they are vaccinated, they have weak immune systems, so I'm very careful.
That's great, Janelle. Thanks, and best of luck. I feel for you. Man, do we have a lot of calls. Mike in Jacksonville. Hey, Mike, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Okay, so last year there was an emergency mandate signed by the governor saying that if your school wasn't set up to do virtual learning, that they could do it for that school year. So my son last year was exposed to COVID three times in school and had to stay home for 10 days he had to learn online. This year there is no emergency mandate at some of the schools. What's going to happen when he gets exposed to COVID this year and is told he can't go to school for 10 days, but yet the school's not set up for online learning? So DeSantis better sign this executive order for this year, or he's going to have a lot of pissed off parents like myself.
Mike,
this
thanks. Mike, I hear you, and I appreciate the call. I'm right there with you. We've still got one child in the Duval County Public Schools in our household. Thank you, Mike. Carrie on the South Side. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, yes, I am calling because we actually live abroad but have come back to visit our family for the summer in Florida. And it's amazing to me that when we landed in Florida, we didn't even, it's like the pandemic didn't exist any longer. And then, you know, our daughter got sick last week. She had a temperature of 104, and my husband and I sat there in complete agony of whether or not we could take her to the ER or if we should try to triage her at home. Because of people who are making the choice to be unvaccinated and is jeopardizing our access to healthcare if we need it. Now, that being said, I don't know why, if this is happening, like, is it something that they could do where they could set up those, like, field tent hospitals and see COVID patients there? And, I mean, I know it doesn't sound compassionate, but at some level, like, if you're choosing to not get vaccinated, and I understand there are cases in which some people can't, but if you're choosing to not get vaccinated, then maybe you are spending 36 hours waiting on a healthcare provider, but somebody who, you know, just has a sick kid can go straight into the ER, because we are making the responsible choices. But it feels like the vaccinated are really carrying the burden of the entire nation.
Yeah.
In everything that we do, you know, based on their decisions.
And I'm so sorry about your child, Carrie. Thank you for the call. I hope she's better soon. Shelton Hull, I think this is the week that vaccinated America finally said, okay, we've had enough of this. We've had enough. We're tired of the unvaccinated prolonging this pandemic and causing so much pain. And this sentiment is growing that the unvaccinated should be the folks who are inconvenienced, not the vaccinated. And so what about that?
Well, sure, that's a very legitimate concern. And I understand why they feel that way. I feel like we've gone so far at this point. It's kind of like the war we had a few years back. We had an easy decision to make. You know, there's a particular way to do things like that, and we chose not to do it. Our politicians chose to put their ego ahead of getting the job done, and the result is all this suffering. I'll tell you what, personally, anyone who's read my work knows that there's no one who's read more conspiracy theory than I have, going back to the 80s, everything from Sherman Skolnick to Behold a Pale Horse. Every website, left-wing, right-wing, mm-hmm. anarchist, syndicalist, everything. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, if there is anything, if there is any truth to any of this, I'd be the first one out there saying it. But when I went in to get my vaccine, when I got my vaccine, I said, you know what, I got these choices. Give me the Pfizer vaccine. if Sheldon Hall is doing business with Pfizer, that's how real this is. I got the Pfizer vaccine specifically to say that after everything, and you know what's up with Pfizer, I took that vaccine from Pfizer because that's how serious this is for the children, for the people that are immunocompromised, for the children with special needs, for people that are recovering from other diseases, for people we don't know. We've already seen how our failure to have mask mandates, how our failure to get properly vaccinated in time. Hell, Florida, we're barely crossing the threshold of 50% fully vaccinated in this state, and we're at the midway point. You know, we're like about, you know, halfway through the states in terms of our rank on that. We've already seen how that sort of thing may have directly contributed to the Delta variant. And who knows what variants are going to come along next. You know, our healthcare workers.
The Lambda variant is next, although apparently it's a little less deadly. Yeah, I hear you, Shelton. Okay. And so what Shelton is saying is if Shelton can get the Pfizer vaccine, everyone should get the Pfizer vaccine or the another vaccine. Here's a tweet from Alberto. You need to think of vaccines as being like a seatbelt or an airbag. They can save your life, but you still don't want to get into a car crash. A mask is like the traffic lights, the brakes, and the turn signals. He goes on to say yes, there are breakthrough infections happening despite people being fully vaccinated, but that vaccines prevent nearly all hospitalizations and deaths. Carolina on the South Side. Hi, Carolina. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to mention, you know, there's no way we're going to get people to get vaccinated by shaming them, but there is a way to kind of isolate things. We need patience or for whatever reason, but they do need to know how much risk they're adding. And honestly, from the physician's perspective, this is exhausting for us. So we should start a hashtag, don't kill my pediatrician, don't kill my doctor, don't kill my piano player, you know, my piano teacher. There's so many things that are impacting everyone. The caller that you had earlier, she said, it sounds uncompassionate, but maybe we should have something that says unvaccinated hospital or unvaccinated rooms versus vaccinated rooms so that people have a little bit more of a separation with that if they're not going to wear masks. If you're not going to get vaccinated, just wear a mask in public.
Right.
And don't put everybody else at risk. It happens every single day. And it happens in my office as well. And we've had to close our doors and put a doorbell on so that people can really be mindful of what happens. And we have I have a wonderful population of patients. Sometimes people just don't know what they don't know. And they're not aware that maybe this is what's going on because they just kind of haven't been listening to all of this stuff. So whatever we can do to kindly and generously and compassionately say, you know, if this is really killing people.
Sure, yeah.
People that you know and you love
and
serve you. I think that's something that maybe we can get through to people.
Carolina, thanks. And thanks for everything you're doing as a healthcare professional. Thanks for the call. Here's an email from Bob. There was a time in this country when everyone would have gladly worn a mask if it would save one child's life. We have over 600,000 fatalities already and counting. When did we lose our way? What road are we on now? Where will we wind up? So Dan Scanlon, what Carolina is getting at and Bob is that we've lost a sense of national unity, that we are all in this together, that we are fighting a common foe, which is this virus, and that we all need to mask up and get vaccinated for our neighbors, for our friends, for our loved ones, and for ourselves. And it really is heartbreaking to see that that's where we are.
You know, watch any World War II era film and you'll see the push for bombs, the push to keep quiet and not talk to your neighbors about stuff. It was a nationwide fever back in the 40s to be American and fight the Nazi and Japanese hordes. And the common good just doesn't seem to be existing here right now. Again, I still have friends who say they're not going to get vaccinated, although one of them over the weekend was wavering a bit and saying maybe it's time to bite the bullet. So I think it's just time to get it done. It's nothing much. You could do it at your local pharmacy, and you have a better chance, I think, is what the experts are saying. And trust the Fauci's of this world, and not the Facebook stuff that you might be seeing.
You know, that brings up another point I want to touch on. Sydney Bowles, a story on our website right now at WJCT.org. In a campaign email this week from the Friends of Ron DeSantis Political Action Committee, Governor DeSantis is calling for Dr. Fauci, the nation's leading infectious disease expert, to be fired and investigated, accusing Fauci of playing a role in the origin of the coronavirus pandemic, saying that Fauci, through the National Institutes of Health, was involved in funding the work of a lab in Wuhan, China, to experiment on viruses in ways that made them more deadly to human beings. Okay, two things here. First, most experts don't believe a lab leak from Wuhan is the likely origin of COVID-19, although we'll continue to follow whether that changes. And second, Dr. Fauci was not involved in funding what they call gain-of-function research on viruses that caused COVID to spread through this country. So we need to be clear on that. But, you know, the governor is actually calling for Fauci to be fired and investigated, which shows you where his head is at on this and why I think we have such stark division in this country over who's to blame for this virus.
That campaign email from DeSantis is an incredibly bad faith effort to capitalize on decades of misinformation. He talks about a Faucian dystopia. It's just, it's clearly factually inaccurate. It's fear-mongering, and it's building on a climate that exists that has polarized common sense public health and the way that we owe each other compassion and empathy and small things that we can do to help each other. I think it's incredibly destructive. And I think it makes the job of doctors and frankly of journalists who want to get good information out to people, it makes our job harder because we're operating in an environment where it's not that we're, that reasonable questions are being asked. It's that fear is being capitalized on for political gain.
A.G. Gankarski, what about that? You have been covering the governor and the goings-on in Tallahassee for some time now. And, you know, I have to say, this week, the anger really crested when we just reached a crisis situation in Jacksonville. And as you pointed out, people in local hospitals are begging for help from the state. And this is the response we're getting from the state, is fundraising emails blaming Fauci for this situation.
Well, I mean, I think you have to separate the governor's political committee from what he's doing in the policy perspective. They certainly make that distinction. And, you know, most of these state level politicians do that. You know, DeSantis will tell you he has advocated vaccines. He's gone around advocating vaccines. He did the whole Seniors First tour in the early part of this year. You know, and as he messaged on vaccines, he hit more and more diminishing returns. I mean, people in rural areas, his base, you know, don't want to hear it. But, you know, ultimately, you know, he's taken the position that this is a liberty moment. This is a moment where, you know, the states take a stand against the overarching federal government. And he's done it on the CDC things regarding the crews, no sail orders and so on. But with this particular governor, you know, he's also looking at 2024. There are a lot of purity tests. He's got like people like Kristi Noem from the South Dakota governor saying that, you know, some governors instituted lockdowns and say they didn't. And that's a shot across the bow off DeSantis. So DeSantis, you know, has a number of different things in play. You know, his administration is always betting that the virus will peak and it'll work itself out. And that was a bet they made earlier in the pandemic. That's a bet they're making now. His advocates and adherents are saying, well, people aren't dying. You know, it's middle of the pack in terms of death in the state. You know, it's not as bad as it could be. And, you know, that's the argument. And that's thin gruel for people who actually want virus mitigation. But, you know, they continue to take a laissez-faire approach because they know the Republican base won't tolerate lockdowns and, you know, mask mandates and all these things. And part of that is because for 40 years, for 40-plus years, people have done exactly what they were told to do. You know, they peed in jars for drug tests. They basically took, you know, after 9/11, all the TSA stuff. And on this issue, as their dollar kept losing value, it seems like they basically said, you know what, we're taking a stand here. You know, and they literally might have chosen this hill to die on. But this feels like kind of a backlash against decades after decades of government interfering in people's lives and people feeling powerless. And this is sort of the, okay, we're going to upset the apple cart moment for that sort of approach to libertarianism.
Except for the fact that that approach is causing other people to die.
That's the flip side there. I mean, I'm not condoning.
Yeah.
I mean, but I'm saying there is an emotionalism underneath it that is a historic grievance for some of these people.
Yeah, I hear you. Here's a message from Lauren. She says, I am going on a long planned trip next week with friends, but I'm reconsidering. We're all in our late 20s, and I'm the only one vaccinated. My friends are saying that if vaccines become required for travel, they won't go. They're mad that life isn't back to normal, but they are the ones dragging this out. They don't have a legitimate answer to my question of why not get the vaccine, but they seem to believe the government is trying to control us or that the vaccine is poorly studied. These are educated young professionals, but they still seem to believe this crazy misinformation. It's sad and infuriating, she says. All right, let's go to Cabine in Jacksonville. Cabine, good morning.
Good morning, good morning.
Go ahead.
Yes, I believe that the vaccine, since many of the government regulations on many states is not mandatory at this point, but however, this is a pandemic. I think it's a citizen's responsibility and duty is to protect their neighbors, their coworkers, their schoolmates to either get the vaccine or get fully masked. I think the options are there, and this is a pandemic that requires a civic duty and a patriotic duty to either get the vaccine or get the mask.
Thank you for that. And Shelton Hull, you know, we were talking a little while ago about another listener saying, why can't we all come together as a nation? A listener tweets, they're talking about the problem of nostalgia for an America that never existed, really, and cannot now unify against a common enemy. It indicates our irreparable divisions. There is no call to empathy here. Empathy presumes that we see each other as humans. Maybe it's futile, Shelton, to appeal to people's empathy, but this is the moment where we must try to continue to do that. To ask our fellow citizens to have empathy for the people who are suffering and dying right now or are desperately sick, and for the healthcare workers and teachers who are on the front lines of this crisis and are doing everything they can for the community. You know, we're trained to be, to just objectively present information, but I really think this is the time when we must step aside from that stance and call to this community to have empathy for others and to try to do your part so that we can all live and thrive and get past this crisis.
Absolutely. It's, and the problem isn't a lack of empathy. The majority of Americans are empathetic, are doing their best. They're trying their best to make it go in circumstances that have been just increasingly stacked against them. The problem that we're having now is a problem related to narcissists and sociopaths who are seeing this as a means of elevation. I mean, I don't care what politician you are. We're coming up into between 2022, 2023, and 2024, these next 3 years, every elected office in America is coming up for grabs. And I don't care if you're a Democrat, if you're a Republican, if you're running for mayor, if you're running for governor, if you're running for president, if you politicians out there ruin another Christmas, if they ruin two Christmases in a row, because they can't get along, none of their jobs are going to be safe. And you know me, I'm a humble man. There are very few cases in life where I would ever say that a global dictatorship led by me would actually be an improvement on the status quo. But right now, you know, I think it kind of would be. And with the help of my friends at Pfizer, maybe it will be someday. Inshallah.
All right. Let's take one more call. Ryan in St. John's County. Go ahead, Ryan.
Hey, thank you. Just to his point, exactly that, you know, it seems like the elected officials that are in charge of our public health and policy, you know, what motivates them is political office ambition. You know, I see some flags with some people's names on it for 2024. But if they're not doing the work that we need, if they're not taking care of us, let's hold them accountable. And the only way that we have to move that is through free and public elections. And that's even been toyed with quite a bit. So just using the means that we have in order to take care of people, because obviously, you know, trust in public health and doing what's best for others is not what motivates them. So we need to take what motivates them and hold them accountable. Thank you.
Thank you, Ryan. And thank you so much to our panel, Sydney Bowles, Shelton Hull, A.G. Gankarski, and Dan Scanlon. Be safe, everybody, and thanks.
Thanks, Melissa.
Thank you.
And once again, folks, this is no joke. We are really in a public health crisis in Greater Jacksonville right now. Please mask up when you go outside, and please get vaccinated. Please. In a moment, how you can catch some of tomorrow's Olympic hopefuls here in Jacksonville this weekend. That's next. Florida hospitals are once again overwhelmed with mostly unvaccinated patients as the Delta variant of coronavirus spreads through the state. I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup.
This week, the spread of the virus and the push to get more residents vaccinated. Plus, the governor facing off against the CDC saying he will not allow masks in Florida schools.
Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Friday at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
A concrete plan emerges from the Senate.
We're talking about the biggest dedicated investment in bridges since the Eisenhower administration when they set up the interstate highway system in the first place.
But it's the House that has the power of the purse. Can Speaker Pelosi now build bridges and deliver for the president? That and much more on the Friday News Roundup, next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, if you've been watching the Olympics right now, guess what? You can catch some of tomorrow's Olympic hopefuls in action right here in town this weekend during the 2021 National Junior Olympics Track and Field Championships. President Angela Harris is on the line now to tell us more. Hey, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. Okay, so we've been talking about some really heavy stuff on this show, so I'm excited to touch on a lighter topic. Tell us about what's going to be happening. This is at Hodges Stadium on the UNF campus this weekend. People can come out and see thousands of athletes, young athletes. Tell us all about it.
Yes, we started on July the 26th with our 12 and under athletes. And yesterday we started with our athletes that were ages 13 to 18. And we have about 6,000 athletes from all over the 50 states. So it's an exciting time, a little bit hot, but it's exciting and we're just roaring and ready to go.
Excellent. And, you know, it's great timing because, of course, we've all been watching the Olympics in Tokyo. There's a lot of just enthusiasm about the Olympics, as there always is. And you want to capitalize on that, right?
Oh, most definitely. Most of our athletes are probably, like they say, future Olympians. So, and this is what starts it off with the grassroots program. So a lot of times, you know, these athletes start at age six and they just continue to go. And USA Track and Field offers them a wide variety of things, also like scholarships and be on some of the national youth teams as well.
And Visit Jax estimates this event will generate over $11 million for the Jacksonville community. Angela, you expect a lot of folks coming out, don't you?
Oh, yes. We've had a lot of folks coming out the first couple of days as well. And back in 2015, you know, the economic impact was about $16 million. So, yeah, so we're looking forward to it. And everyone's having a great time. You know, no one is against coming to Florida for any of our events.
This also gives you a sense of how early people start to get in the queue to compete at the Olympic level. These are young kids. Tell us a little bit more about that, what these families and these kids sacrifice to become Olympic-level athletes.
They sacrifice a lot because there's a lot of training and dedication and, you know, it's a lot of hard work, but it's something that they want to do. And track and field, it is indeed a summer sport. So it's hot, and, you know, with the sacrifices and the rewards, they always pay off. Like I said, we start at the grassroots level from ages 6, and then we just compete all the way up until age 18. So it's definitely a sport that you have to be dedicated in, and it's not for, you know, it's for anyone. So it's not for the faint of heart, but it's also rewarding for those that also do it.
What are your thoughts, Angela, about Simone Biles, Naomi Osaka, athletes that have really risen to the pinnacle of their sport, and they've said, look, this is too much pressure for me. I'm going to pull back. I'm having mental health challenges. There is so much pressure placed on these young athletes. And increasingly we're seeing them say, you know what? It's too much. What are your thoughts about that as president of USA Track and Field and seeing these young wannabe Olympians coming to Jacksonville?
Right. And I'm the president of USA Track and Field, Florida. But I mean, because now I'm glad that it's out in the open, anything about mental illness. Back then, it was just a stigma. So now athletes are feeling more comfortable talking to their coaches about, you know, how they feel and, you know, their mental capacity. So it's a great opportunity. And, you know, my hat's off to Simone Biles and Osaka for, you know, knowing that, you know, they had an issue and definitely trying to get it and overcome it.
And so what kind of support do you think should be available for young athletes that we might not have currently? What do you think we as a nation should be doing as we watch this play out in Tokyo?
I think more awareness, because like I said, a lot of times these are things that they don't talk about. So just having awareness and having their coaches and their parents not be afraid to tell them that it's okay. It's okay if they feel like, you know, they're feeling some kind of way and they're not feeling themselves. It's okay to talk about it and not be worried about what someone will think of them.
That's so important. So with all of that said, we're speaking with Angela Harris, president of USA Track and Field Florida, as tomorrow's Olympic hopefuls, compete in Jacksonville this weekend for the 2021 USA Track and Field National Junior Olympics Track and Field Championships. At the Hodges Stadium on the UNF campus, more than 6,000 athletes representing all 50 states, and they range in age from 7 to 19 years old. We're talking the triathlon, the pentathlon, the decathlon, other events. You can get tickets to come see this. Tell us about that, Angela, how people can come out and watch the fun.
Yes, tickets are available, $15 for the adults as well as $10 for the youth, and we have daily pass as well as multi-day pass.
Yeah, check it out at USATFJOJAX.com for a complete list of events and more information to get your tickets. Thank you so much and have fun, Angela. She's Angela Harris, president of USA Track and Field Florida. Thanks.
Thank you.
Again, that's this weekend and it's outside, so not an indoor event, which is good right now. And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. And thanks to producer Heather Schatz, director Josh Torres, associate producer Catherine Hobbs, with technical help from Isabella Da Silva. Thanks also to editorial director Jessica Palumbo and digital editor Bill Bortsfield and the entire WJCT News team. Be sure to join us today at noon for the Florida Roundup, our live statewide call-in program, rounding up the biggest stories across the Sunshine State from the week. This week, a closer look at Florida dealing with the Delta variant of coronavirus, a serious situation we will continue to monitor here at WJCT News. I'm Melissa Ross. This has been First Coast Connect on WJCT News, 89.9 Jacksonville. Have a great Friday and be safe, everyone. Please mask up and please get vaccinated.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.